Hello, and welcome back to the Next Level Show. I'm Aurora, and I am joined today by Vinny Eastwood, and I've been kind of drilling him, I'm afraid. We're going to lighten things up. Salamo is on the line, area code 418. Did you have a question for Vinny?
Well, I did. He was talking about protests, and I'm in Quebec, Canada.
Okay, speak up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I'm in Quebec, Canada, and now protests in Quebec. It's illegal to wear a mask, and also you have to have permission to have a protest. You have to give the route to the police and everything. And the police can deem a protest illegal at any point in time. So if we go back to the rule of law, if you can get people to believe in the concept of rule and law, rule of law, and the concept of rule of law is not just about the law, it is about the lawmakers. Then whenever they make a new rule, it just becomes acceptable. And that's exactly what's happened with the protest here. And that is crazy.
And I am back. I'm sorry about that. I got used to the Revolution Radio having like 7-minute ad breaks or something. There's something strange going on with this today. But anyway, I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine. Well, he was talking about, I wrote it in the text, protests in Canada, and at any time they can get, the police can shut them down for no reason. They're just, I guess, basically not allowed. Is that right, Salamo?
Well, I could start over if you want.
Okay, go ahead and do that really quick.
Okay. And I'd just like to add that your guest so far is awesome. And myself, I lived in Australia for 2.5 years, and I still can't determine the accent. Kiwi, Australian, it's very similar.
There's one principal difference, and that's the pronunciation of the letter I and the letter E. For example, if a New Zealander asks for a pen, we ask for a pen. If a Australian asks for a pen, they ask for a pen. All right?
Oh, that's true.
Right? Whereas if I'm asking for a pin, I ask for a pin. Whereas an Australian asks for a pin, they're asking for a pen. So it's really strange.
There's subtleties that are lost sometimes. But I'll explain what I was saying. We were talking about protests. And here where I am, I'm in Quebec, Canada. And in Quebec, Canada, it's now passed that, well, it's legal to wear a mask in a protest. Because, hey, if you got nothing to hide, why should you hide yourself?
But also, hey, I got a joke about that. What do you call a Canadian movie about time travel?
What's that?
Quebec to the Future.
But also in these protests, you have to register with your local police and give them an itinerary and your route. And the police at any time have the right to deem your protest illegal.
Yeah, and I think this is something that is quite important for people to know. And I think it's just, we operate under the illusion that we have freedom of speech, that we have freedom of choice, that we have freedom in general, you know, and face facts here, you know, tomorrow they could shut everything down, you know, they got the technology, they got the capacity, they're just not doing it yet for some reason, maybe because the public's too resistant at this point and they need another 20 to 30 years of brainwashing and mind control and sterilance in the water and things of that nature and destruction of the family unit and increases in poverty levels so that basically people will be too dumb, have no family support network or any resources to resist, and that's when they might just go, oh yeah, it's all over. It's all over, Rover. And
can I add something?
You go for your life.
Can I add something? That also, with all these protests that you have to have permission for and all the protests that they allow to happen, it's about giving people that sense of importance, that sense of, I am doing something, I feel important, that sense of empowerment, even though it's false.
Well, it's about false, hope and faith.
Is it false because it's illegal, or is it false because it's something that will never happen? It's like pipe dreams.
I think it's false because it's allowed.
Oh. Hmm.
Well, I think the one...
You've got a lot of protests... I'm sorry. You've got a lot of protests that just aren't allowed and they're quashed right away.
Well, but there's...
The ones that aren't, are the ones that are false.
Well, I don't think so at all. In fact, what I believe is the unwritten rule of democracy is that you can say and do whatever you want so long as it doesn't actually change anything. That's it's not necessarily a false protest if you're going out and you're protesting against something real, but that protest isn't going to change anything, and so they allow you to do it, kind of thing. And then that's more or less how the law is applied. Man, these guys are being effective. Man, they're actually exposing our agenda. Man, they might actually upset the established order. Cut it off at the head, right like that. Boom. I don't like those people protesting, wanting their freedoms. Exposing our scumbaggery. You know, you get that kind of aggression, sort of, I don't know, vile, viper, snake kind of scumbaggery going on there whenever you're talking about suppression or oppression. And I think we're, in this day and age, we're relatively unschooled as to what oppression really feels like, okay? I mean, I've talked to people who lived in Russia during the Stalinist era. It was quite funny. I was at a party one time with an old friend, and one of his mates was Russian, and we were talking about the New Zealand Labour Party. They're our equivalents of the Democrats. And at the time he was here, he was remembering what his grandmother had told him, and he said that the things that were coming out of the mouths of the Labour Party at the time were things that he'd been told by his grandmother that the Stalinist government had been saying, the kind of terminology, phraseology, sort of policies that they'd been introducing step by step in order to oppress their population. And to me, what this means is that you kind of actually have to suffer to a large degree before you'll wake up to something in order to see it before it happens and prevent others from suffering, and in order to actually have that kind of motivation. Like, this is why I became a cannabis activist, because I got busted for cannabis, and I saw how bad it was for me. And I saw that out of all the people that I smoked weed with, the one who got damaged the most by that marijuana was the person who got arrested for it. You know, destroys your life.
Do you think that if everyone who went to jail and had a panic attack and that bad experience like you, you think if that were something they could do to people that would keep them from doing it again, a repeat offender?
No. It's a very individual choice thing, and it depends on a lot of different factors. Your background, who your influences are, who your mentors are. Like, I come from a very interesting family. My father is a genius and an inventor, and he had a massive forklift tire company. He had the largest distributorship in the Southern Hemisphere, designed 400 different types of forklift tire himself, and he invented the mechanism for bonding rubber to steel. He invented a specific type of tire that resolved traction issues and freezing works back in the 70s and 80s. And my mother is was a nurse, and she's kind of like an intuitive and a poet. So I've got this kind of entrepreneurial / spiritual / creative God-given gift of the gab kind of thing going for me, and because I'm used to operating sort of in that environment where the people where you came from operate at a high level, it's almost like you expect more of yourself, you know? And so when I felt depressed, when I felt like everything was over, I didn't accept it. I couldn't. It actually became almost like a challenge. Okay, I was at square 10, and now I'm back to square 1. How long is it going to take me to get back to square 10? Like, that's kind of like the first impression that you get while you're dealing with the suffering and pain and injustice, is how do you get back to where you were? And not about forgetting what happened, not about forgetting who you are, but about realizing that you are stronger than the traumas that happened to you, and you can overpower them. by your sheer act of will alone. And a lot of people don't realize that they have that power. They haven't had the same influence. They haven't had the same upbringing. And so when they have the hard hand of the law passed down upon them, they don't try to think about how to get back to square 10. They consistently sit and sulk and have nothing to live for because they're still on square one, and they have been pretty much their entire lives.
You're saying they just comply because that's their default, right?
No, I'm saying they comply because they've had a lot of things to reinforce the idea that they're powerless in their life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Television is, I think, a huge way to do that. If you watch, it's mostly cop shows on TV anymore, it seems like. And half the crap that's on there is not even real. It's not, you know, the situations that they're in and the technology is like 40 years old. They're not doing anything original. But I think that TV teaches people to be passive. And just, you know what I mean, not do it because why? Why bother? And people give up, like you're saying.
Well, I was talking to a listener down in Queenstown, and he wanted to, like, start doing a bit of hip-hop, you know, exposing the New World Order that way in his own way. And I just asked him, so how many hours a day, and everybody should ask themselves this question, how many hours a day do you spend consuming other people's content? And how many hours a day do you spend creating content of your own in order to add to that pool? Now, this isn't just TV or radio that I'm talking about. This is about the content of your life. Are you inventing something? Are you creating a business? Are you writing a blog or a book or something of that nature? Are you creating something? Okay, this is the indelible power that we have instilled in all of us, is the ability to create. Psychos don't have that ability. They have the ability to steal other people's ideas, manipulate them and distort them and to turn them into something that they're not. But they can't create something out of nothing. They can't will things into existence unless they take it from one of us. And this strikes me as basically our most important power is creativity.
And that's a lot of spiritual stuff too, because people like that, they can't create anything original. They do have to take something and twist it and make it their own.
Yeah.
That's a spiritual law too.
Now we've got a lot of these questions that we need to run through as well. I feel that we're not getting through many of them.
Well, I think we got through a lot of them.
I got one.
Okay, go.
Okay, with all this, all this.
Can you speak up?
All this false stuff that comes up through our lives. Okay, the stuff that we can realize and the stuff that we can see, and us being the truth alternative media followers and stuff like that. One of the questions that we, as a whole, don't seem to ask ourselves is, are our opinions our own? If we're stuck in a controlled brainwashing society from birth, how can we be sure that the opinions that we hold are our own? Where do we start to question, and when does that questioning become madness?
Well, there's an old philosophy called the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. And the story goes like this. How do you know if you're the cosmic schmuck? If you've never questioned, if you've never sat there one day and you just go, you know what, am I the cosmic schmuck? Then you probably are. But if you constantly question that, then you probably won't become one. And I think that's where our ideas come into it, is actually the process of the questioning. I was thinking about a listener that contacted me a couple of years ago, and he left a voicemail message to me. And he said, Vinny, he sounded really, really down. I've been working at a government department, and the whole goal of this government department is to shaft people, and I know that it is. And I used to be really upset about it, and I used to really not have any empathy. I used to have a lot of empathy for these people and what they're going through as we're trying to extract taxes out of them, and it really hurts them and destroys their life. But recently, I've stopped caring because I couldn't, because it was hurting me too much. And he sounded really, really, you know, freaked out. He's like, "Vinny, am I turning into a scumbag?" And so I send him a message back and I say, "Well, bro, the mere fact that you're questioning whether or not you're becoming a scumbag is actually your answer. Of course you're not, because a scumbag doesn't question whether or not they're a scumbag. They just keep committing scumbaggery because it's fun. If you feel bad about it because of your actions, it means that you're very human. But it also means that you're under the influence. You know, kind of like when you get drunk and you shouldn't probably be behind the wheel of a car. If you're working for an organization that hurts people and it's actually hurting you as a person working there, it's time to find another job, son, you know, or better yet, just quit your job and start doing something on your own time, in your own life, in your own way."
Well, that is a paradigm shift for a lot of people, but when you come to the realization that you can't keep doing what you're doing, some people just give up. They don't know what else to do. Mm. And I think we lost the caller. Mm. What is the government like in New Zealand? Is it corporation-based? Because that's what America is coming to. I don't know if you watch TV, but that show Continuum on Sci-Fi, it's pretty, it's like they're telling us a story of what it's going to be, because the corporations rule everything. Is it getting that way seriously in New Zealand? It seems to be that way here.
Yeah, well, there's an old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Okay, let me just fire a few questions at you. Have you got scumbaggery corporations that don't obey the law and then bribe politicians, and then the politicians let them get away with it?
Oh, yeah.
We've got that too. Have you got fluoride in the water, despite the fact that there's a huge amount of health concerns and a whole bunch of people uprising against it, but basically everybody's getting fluoridated whether they like it or not, using lies and BS to justify it? We've got that too. Have you got a medical system that kills more people than any other leading cause of death in your country? We've got that too. So here's the thing. There is patently no difference whatsoever. Whatever problem you've got, we've got the same problem, but it's a slightly sexier accent.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know.
We've got the thing called a sovereign parliament. So it means that no parliament can bind any future government. So if you write a law that says, I don't know, like my one is the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, where, you know, scumbaggery would become illegal and it would actually be a very serious charge. A government could come along directly after that, be elected like the next day for all intents and purposes, and go, "Yeah, we're just going to remove that. Oh, you got Bill of Rights? Yeah, we'll remove that too. Oh, you got these things that are restricted, like restricting the revolving door of politicians coming out of public service and then going directly into private employment for people that are affected by the exact policies that they enacted while they were in public office. Yeah, we'll get rid of that one too. All these protections, everything that has been built up over goodness knows how long to ensure people have rights, justice, fairness in an equal society, gets undermined, but they don't do it all at once. They just do it step by step by step by step until eventually you're at the top of the mountain freezing to death and nobody even knows how you got there."
Well, do you have the equivalent of Agenda 21, or is it another
name? We have
name
Agenda
or-
21 offices in the Hamilton City Council building. We went to a national organization for the reform of marijuana laws conference in Wellington, the capital, and in our hotel room, they had Planet 21 stickers on things, you know, save the environment, that kind of thing. It's actually being this big campaign. Agenda 21 is huge in New Zealand. We're implementing it really, really fast.
Well, So you have the Common Core curriculum in the schools and everything too.
Well, thing is, again, same difference, different accent. So instead of Common Core, we call it NCEA. All right, and I don't even know what the anagram mean, but basically, we went from school certificate, which is where you do an exam at the end of the year, and that's like 50% of your mark or whatever. And now we've got NCEA, where they basically do little projects all the way through the school year, and they get, instead of A's and B's and C's, they get achieved or achieved very well, and that kind of thing. It's sort of like, I had a realization about a year or two ago that I went to high school, I went to elementary school, I went to university, and if I had to add them all up, it'd probably be a total of 14 years, okay, of indoctrination, of education. Not once has anything I've learned during those 14 years become of use to me in real life. Not once. That's how useless it is. They are adept at teaching you things that don't matter, haven't ever mattered, and will never matter. And they have the audacity to call it education.
I totally agree with you on that point. And the thing that I see in the school is there's no competition. There's no gold star system for somebody doing like extracurriculum. Everything has to be fair. Everybody has to get the same amount. You know what I mean? If you achieve something, if you do your homework and get extra credit or whatever, you should be rewarded for that, but they're not. Everything is the same, and that's going to be the way it is down the road. Everyone's going to be on the same page and have the same rules, and you're going to exercise the same. You know what I mean?
Here's how you tell whether or not the education system is working. Have Americans, New Zealanders, and everybody who has a public school system gotten smarter in general over the last 100 years or dumber?
Right.
They've gotten a lot dumber. Like, it's... I was shown a... you love this. A sixth grade exam, okay, from like 1886 or something. And the first question is, name 7 types of cloud. It's like, whoa. And they get worse, you know. it's just like, if you're sitting that exam today, this is something that like an 8 or a 9 year old would know in the late 1800s. And this is something that we know about maybe 1 to 2% of the general knowledge and would fail so astronomically miserably that it's laughable how dumb we are today. And, you know, that's another thing that I've had to come to accept is that I'm not as smart as I think I am. I'm actually very, 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 very dumb by comparison to how intelligent our ancestors were, who were basically only really had organic food, and they all happened to be, you know, illiterate because of the Bible and so on and so forth. And there was a lot of reality, really. You had to be creative and go outside and play and have fun, and fresh water was a standard kind of thing. And it just, today we've gotten a lot more distractions from who we really are available to us and made available specifically because if we have to force ourselves to be healthy, to be creative, to have fun with those things, then a lot of the things that we value and hold dear today that we experience on a daily basis, whether that be fast food or television or video games, we wouldn't value them anymore. All right, and I think we've been taught, coerced into valuing things that have no value, and it took a long period of time to get us into this position, and I believe it's going to take a long, long time to get us out of this position, right? I mean, a lot of truthers go out there and they think they're going to change the world in a day. Bro, you're not going to change it in a day, but the thing is, you should resist regardless of your chances of victory. You have to ensure that you are doing something every day to resist the New World Order agenda, even if it's a little way, okay?
Right.
Otherwise, they win, okay? They don't win because they win because you give up.
Most people run, like they're running down the street with an axe hit and ready to throw it, and, you know, they don't hit a target, so they give up. They don't, they're not willing to realize, if I take baby steps, I'm going to start taking big steps. And about the cloud thing, I can think of cirrus and cumulus, that's all. I don't think a college student could pass that test.
Well, you know, and again, a friend of mine from high school, his sister went to an American university for a year. She went from a New Zealand university to an American university. And it was like that test in Idiocracy, where he's like, if one bucket has 10 liters of water and this other bucket has 5 liters of water, how many buckets do you have? Like, man, this test is really easy. It was like that. And Americans, sorry to say this, but you've been dumbed down more than anybody else, all right?
I agree.
You've actually
even know what's going on across the ocean in another country. They have no idea what's even happening in their own neighborhood.
One in seven Americans cannot locate America on a map. All right?
That's sad.
That's rude.
That's just sad.
It's bad, man. Only like one in eight Americans has a passport and is actually able to travel. And I was coming back on a plane from Queenstown. One of my listeners shouted me a ticket to go down there to cover his story. And I was sat next to these two Americans on the way back, and they seemed pretty clued on. You know, we had a good conversation and that kind of thing. And they understand that the government's full of scum and that kind of thing. And so when we parted ways, I said to them, see you later, guys. Enjoy what's left of your country. And they laughed their asses off.
Oh my gosh.
we know it's inherently true, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah. And see, when you're coming across this, and because America's so isolated in this sense from the international community, Americans are hated worldwide. Let me.
I know that people don't get that. They do not understand that.
Yeah, in the royal we sense of the word, like we meaning the world culture in general, we hate Americans. Okay. And this is something that I've really struggled with, because I used to be anti-American, sort of like socialist leanings or whatever, before I woke up to the truth. And this is kind of like this divide and conquer mechanism on steroids. Here you have a country that was the first to create a republic to throw off the largest military dominating colonial power in the history of the world, that had the fastest performing economy with a 10% growth per year, and no taxation, the highest education, the best health care, the best of absolutely everything. And I see it corrupted, and I see it destroyed, not from without, but from within.
Right.
And the horrible realization was that the exact same thing is happening to my country, but they're just not as far down the track as yet, but we still have all the exact same problems nonetheless. And what this realization taught me is that I'd never actually really hated Americans, and I don't think anybody actually really does. What we've all hated is what the government does, what the right. corporations do, what the scumbaggery elements within your nation do. And once you realize that, once you realize that we've all got the same problems and the same oppressor, that makes us brothers and sisters together in the fight against these frickin' filth. And it seems to me that because we're on the other side of the world from each other, it doesn't mean that we can't lend a helping hand, because there've been many times in my life where I've been down on my luck or really harsh or something, and somebody who I don't even know, who might live miles away from me or whatever, will offer me a word of encouragement or give me some wisdom. But ultimately what they did is they made me realize that I wasn't alone in all of this. So I just want to tell all the Americans, regardless of how bad things are, you're not alone in this. There's people like me in every country of the globe who knows what's happening to your nation, who doesn't like it, and who wants to help, who wants to lend a helping hand from 10,000 miles away. And that is an encouraging thought.
Well, I will tell you something that I've said before. I get rocks thrown at me all the time, but if you watch 20 years ago the G.I. Joe cartoon, basically that's what America is G.I. Joe World Police. They told us exactly what we were going to do, what our role was going to be, and the requirements in the cartoons. They've told us everything in your face, even if it's a child's story. They're telling us exactly what their plan and their agenda is. And people don't realize that. I get in trouble because I say the Constitution is dead. It expired in 2005. With the Patriot Act and Homeland Security and NDAA, that replaced the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't exist after those documents. But they let it stay in place, I believe, because they're not ready for, I guess, the mass panic, or to, they're slowly bringing things in and changing things, but they're letting things stay the status quo, and I don't understand all the reasons, but they know what they're doing, and we have no clue what they're doing. Most people don't. They don't even think anything's going to happen, because everything has been the same for them their whole life. But they don't know what it's like to go through a hunger spell, or, you know what I mean? Or after the World War, or have your country be at war. And Europeans do know about that, because they had it right on their front step. They had, you know what I mean, Nazis and whatever. So Americans are very isolated, and they're very, I don't even remember the word, they're just tunnel vision. They don't have no peripheral vision, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's, again, the exact same thing that's happening, because I'll go around and I'll talk to New Zealanders about various issues, and invariably I get the same ignorant, stupid responses that you'd get from anybody in any country in the world, that kind of thing. It's a global dumbing down, and it can be frustrating sometimes, but, you know, you can't give up and you can't stop doing what you're doing because you have a moral obligation to do something about it, right? If you see your friends, your family, your country slipping into darkness and you choose to stop fighting for it, so because you want to, I don't know, you want to make some money for yourself, or you want to have a bit of power for yourself or something like that. I mean, I once toyed with the idea of getting wealthy and having power and influence and things of that nature. And then it slowly dawned on me that I would actually have to stop doing the right thing in order to obtain those, because I haven't seen too many people, if any, make ridiculous fortunes and obtain immense amounts of power and influence by doing the right thing. I've only seen people who do evil things for the wrong reasons, who commit fraud, who gain those kind of trinkets. And it seems to me what the media and various other influencers are trying to get us to do is to not wake up to that fact that you're not going to be rich, you're not going to be powerful, you're not going to be influential, because that high watermark has been captured, right? It's been captured by the so-called 1% and the Rockefellers and Rothschild banking dynasties. They have taken all of the goodness out of competition. Okay, when you're competing against somebody, you're both honestly competing. Okay, you're not trying to steal each other's ideas. You're actually trying to literally come up with a better idea than the other guy on your own. Whereas the modern form of competition involves sabotage, spying, and lying, basically, in order to one-up each other. It's not an honest form of competition anymore. So whatever good ideals behind privatization and capitalism and libertarianism were there, they were philosophies that were built on the predication that criminals don't run all the wealth and power centers of the world already.
Okay, I totally understand what you're saying, and doesn't it seem really ridiculous that the bad guys, the real psychopaths, the ones who do the most damage to people, whether it be their family or whatever, they seem to live forever? It's Like, why are the bad guys? Why can't they be the ones who die young? You know what I mean?
Well, I've got a great quote that I came up with. You know why bad guys don't get assassinated?
Why?
Because only good guys would want to assassinate them, and good guys don't assassinate people.
Gotcha. Like goes with like. Alright, there's a question.
We can't become like them. It's sort of like if somebody offers you something, and this has actually happened to me quite a few times, where somebody will say, Vinny, I'm going to give you $1 million, or I'm going to give you this or that, I'm going to make you famous, I'm going to make you powerful and big or anything, I instantly withdraw from those people and go, whoa, I don't want what you're selling. Okay, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it for the right reasons. I'm not going to accept your influence. If you're going to promise me something, if you're going to promise me wealth, or you're going to promise me power, give it to me without thought of return. Okay? Give it to me. Donate it to me. If you want control over me, if you want to influence me, I'm not interested. If you want to help me, I am interested.
That's right. Don't make it have and hanging on at the end where you have to meet a requirement or something. Well, there's a question from the chat. Vinny, why do you think they plan this crap out to control, or do you think this crap is a beast that has grown out of control?
I don't really understand the question.
Do you think they planned this crap?
Well, of course they did. They admitted they did.
For a long time, hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years. I mean, back to the 1776 Adam Weishaupt document in the formation of the Bavarian Illuminati, where people attended that meeting and came back to their home country saying that a conspiracy was so grand and so vast and so devious that neither the church nor the state nor the people could ever escape it. And anybody who talks about the conspiracy above their breath would be seen as crazy.
Right. Well, shoot. The way that it's set up, there really is no, there's no way out of the whole system. But do you have a religious or spiritual view regarding all of this?
Well, I saw a great Facebook post that says some people don't eat bacon because of religion. I don't do religion because of bacon. And that's more or less my religious philosophy. I don't actually read the Bible or the Quran, but I've talked with many people who are devoutly religious and faithful people who I believe are good people, who I believe haven't actually succumbed to the mindless indoctrination like other people do. A lot of the tenets and principles by which I live my life are actually taken from a number of different religions. For example, I believe in the Muslim ideal of no usury, you know,
no
loaning money out at interest. And you may not know this, but usury and private banking and loans are actually banned in a lot of Muslim countries. I agree with the Christian tenets of the Ten Commandments. You know, don't steal, don't kill. It's basically common law, more or less.
It's common sense also. It's like, how could that not be included in it for a society?
Yeah, like, oh, somebody had to spell it out for you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think when it comes down to it, I am my own spiritual being. I have my own connection to the source. And it's kind of like Nikola Tesla said, I know that there's a source, and I know that it is the source of my ideas and inspiration, but I'm not smart enough to know what that source is or what it's thinking.
Right. Well, I think, and I see that over the last couple of years, a whole lot of things like hidden knowledge, occult stuff has been brought out. And it's mainstream. You can read everything about the Freemasons. They're basically done complete disclosure, and so many other things that we did not have access to. And I see that people are going, "Yay, we beat them! We figured them out! We got their information! You know, we're gonna win!" Blah blah blah. I don't think so, because that's why I named my show The Next Level. I believe they have gone on to something bigger and better that we will not know about for a long time, and it is diabolical. It is not have our best interests, you know, in mind. But I don't think that we have really, you look at Bibliotheca Pleiades, that website. There's so much information there, and most of it is old. It's old stuff, Wayback Machine stuff. It's good, relevant information, but it's not relevant to us right now. It's what already happened and what they did that got us to this point. Does that make sense?
Sure. But on the other element of religion, I've saw a very interesting story one time about the survival rates of United States POWs in Vietnam. And the survival rates for those who were devout Christians and strong believers was far, far, and so significantly higher than those who were atheists. Because if you don't believe in a higher power, if you don't believe in some kind of greater entity or something bigger than yourself, when you're locked away in that cell with no hope of rescue, you're by yourself. With no hope of rescue. If you have faith, you're never by yourself, and you're never without hope. And so the body doesn't shut down as if it knows it's going to die, and you survive. And what this taught me is that it isn't the belief in religion that gives people that power, that survival, that ability. It's merely faith in general. Faith in something bigger than yourself. Faith that you are part of a whole. And my general concept of God is that God is a macro organism, and each organism is part of its own subset of chains. There's a guy called, I forget his name actually. But anyway, in 1913, he invented a granite crystal microscope that got 60,000 times magnification. Okay? Normal electrostatic microscopes that we're using today get about 10,000 times magnification. This technology got suppressed because of what he discovered. He looked inside a normal human cell and found out that it was made up of all of these independent cells, all of these different organisms in between them. And then he looked into one of those and he found out that it was made up of all of these different cells, all acting independently. And he looked into one of those, and it was the same again. And then he looked into one of those, and it was the same again. And he looked into one of and what the realization that he came to, and the reason why his technology was suppressed, is because life is built upon life upon life upon life in an infinite scale, up and down. The fractal universe theory, more or less. I'm starting to believe this to be true. And what a god is the next step up the scale for you. For example, to the 5 trillion cells in my body, I'm God. Okay? To me, I'm one of the 5 trillion cells, you know, give or take, on planet Earth, and Earth's God, okay? And God's part of five trillion planets and suns and so on, or whatever, as part of the galaxy, and the galaxy's God to Earth. And the galaxy is part of a million so on so forth clusters in a red dwarf star cluster or whatever, and that's God to that. And it seems to me that if you've got that kind of realization that you are actually part of a whole, that not only are you a god to the organisms beneath you, but you have gods above you as well. And I think that what people interpret as the will of God is all of those little psychic screams and psionic emanations that come out of all living things. And they... It's kind of like how Star Wars said, it's they interpret the will of the Force by listening to the midichlorians, these little microscopic DNA things. And I think the Earth listens to us as we're living on it and responds and does some really strange and amazing things as a result. And there's so many things that are unexplainable by science, things that should happen that didn't, and vice versa. stories of churches that were commanded to be bombed, where it didn't matter how many times they tried to bomb it, the bombs wouldn't actually drop out of the aircraft. Like, every single time they tried to bomb it, there would be a malfunction. You know, like an against astronomical odds. And I think what this means is that we're all playing a part here in the broader sense of the entire universe, and that each of our bodies is the home to trillions of microscopic civilizations. And so we have an inherent responsibility to play that part as good as we can. As long as we have subjective realization, we can realize who we are, we can realize what we're doing, and we can create things, and we can do whatever we want, more or less. And it's kind of like you're wiping out civilizations if you don't live up to your potential.
Right. Do you believe that psychopaths, are they're born that way? Because I do.
Well, some of them are, I reckon, but some people can be infected. There's a... who was I? I had a couple of psychopath roundtables. If you go to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, ladies and gentlemen, and you search the term psychopath, I had a associate producer for a week who organized three panels with different people talking about the psychopath phenomenon. Some of them talking about it as archons, some of them talking about it as psychopaths, and some of them talking about it as Watiko or Jin. And they all seem to have the exact same influences, and they all agreed across these three different eclectic fields of research and panelists with years and years of experience studying in their field, all of them were in absolutely agreement on one thing, that they can infect you, that they can turn you into one of them if they have enough influence over you, if you have enough fear, if you have enough doubt, if you have as little faith in yourself, they can, almost like it's a an organism, like a cell dividing, traveling through the air, then attaching itself to the back of your brain stem, and then taking it over, shutting off the frontal lobes, empowering the reptilian brain at the bottom of the cortex, and then
that's basically a walk-in.
Yeah. So, you know, they're born and they can be influenced. You can be born a normal person and then have a psychopath come into your life, rape you, kill you, or try to kill you, or something like that. And then because of the amount of fear it generates, you actually become a food source for these parasites.
Right, and because it's like Stockholm Syndrome. You love your abuser so much that you become like him to survive, right?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure if that's exactly it, but you know, close enough. But if you put a psychopath on an island, desert island, give him all the food, shelter, and water he needs to survive, but nobody around to abuse, they'll die.
That's a good point. They would not thrive at all.
Yeah, they need us, and they've needed us for thousands of years. These entities have been around for all this time, since the beginning of civilization. I don't think they're going anywhere fast. And we're going to have to deal with them, conceivably, till the end of time.
Yeah, I would really hate to be stuck in a FEMA camp or something with them. That would be a truly awful experience. I wanted to ask you about that video that you put up about why men die violent deaths and women live longer. Was that by Sam Shea, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Dr. Sam Shea was a great guy, yeah.
A lot of what he talked about was basically what you're talking about, psychopaths. They, you know what I mean? I don't know. They do everything across the spectrum. And what you were talking about earlier, what you believe, I believe the power of belief is like the most powerful thing in the world. And if you believe that you're going to survive, if you believe, you know what I mean? If you believe that you can make it, then you can. Some people don't or can't relate that way, but I do believe that is true. If you, what you believe in, what doesn't matter what you believe in, like I said in that movie, Serenity, just believe. It doesn't matter what you believe in, just believe. And, they tell us this stuff, basically, they reveal what I would call their religion or cult. They tell us this stuff and expose it. But most people don't see it for what it is what I think. But I see that on your YouTube, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, I see the Sam Shea thing. That was a really good interview. It totally, totally explained everything about me and my family. My father was a psychopath and very abusive, and it explained why my mom and I have so many physical issues, you know, fibromyalgia and diabetes and other stuff, immune systems. That explained and made sense of so much stuff, and I really am really impressed with everything that you're doing, because you're just going out full out and doing all this stuff. It's the way I see it is it's information. If you don't like it, leave it alone. If you know if it's something you can use, then pick it up but keep going, because it's just information. That's the only way I know to put it anymore to people.
Yeah, well, I met Dr. Sam Shea at a New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine conference, and his presentation on the 10-point wellness plan floored me. Like, I'd been interviewing health professionals for like 6 or 7 years, and then Dr. Sam Shea comes along, and I'm like, whoa, he's like 10 times as amazing as any health presenter that I've ever seen. Not to belittle anybody, but this guy's got so much information, and he comes from such eclectic knowledge base, as he's a functional neurologist, and he's a he's got a number of different qualifications. He comes from the medical royalty of Philadelphia. His grandfather was the top cardiologist in Philadelphia. You know, really famous man. And what Dr. Sam's great regret is, and the reason why he's motivated to do some of the work and indeed the presentations that he does, is because had he known what he knows now, his grandfather would still be alive today, you know, and so many other people would be as well. We're slowly killing ourselves because we go, oh, we need to have this particular form of exercise and we need it 30 minutes a day. And then Dr. Sam Shea goes, well, actually, the only reason why people think that you need 30 minutes of exercise a day is because back in the day when they were first developing this scheme, they had a thing called VO2 max, which measured the oxygen into your lungs while you're exercising. And the reason why they decided to do it for half an hour and things of that nature is because the university students that were studying the oxygen and the exercise regimes had classes to go to with set period lengths, and they could only do half an hour of research at a time. And so they recommended everybody do half an hour of exercise a day. Whereas Dr. Sam's discovered that it's actually a lot more beneficial to your body if you do sprint training. If you run as hard as you can, but only 60 seconds, you will get really, really huge injections of human growth hormone and a number of other really healthy things, and your body will start to become stronger and healthier right away. Whereas if you're doing constant exercise like marathon running or something of that nature, you're releasing huge quantities of cortisol, which is the opposite of human growth hormone, that literally eats away your muscle. Why do you think all the marathon runners look ridiculously skinny like they're freaking cancer patients? It's because they've been running the whole entire time, flooding their body with hormones that eat muscle tissue. Okay? The body doesn't have a choice. It prioritizes your survival. And that's why this dude who... you remember there was some guy who wrote a book about jogging and how great it was or whatever, and then one day
distance jogging and basically killing yourself.
Yeah, and then he died of a heart attack while out jogging. You know? And that's the kind of thing. And that's just one of a thousand things that Dr. Sam Shea says that are like, whoa.
Totally. I just had to get him in here.
Yeah, I will give you his contact details because, in my opinion, he's probably one of the most important medical minds of our time. And he's here in New Zealand and he's doing conferences and things of that nature. But I've actually kind of made it my personal mission to help Dr. Sam Shea get up there on the world stage because I believe he can save lives.
Yep, I was so impressed with him. I put the 10-point wellness seminar in the chat room, the link for that. But this is the end of the show. I want to thank you very much, Vinny, for being here. This is Revolution Radio, and I will see you next week with the Next Level Show.